Welcome to Dream Big with Jill Jack, a show that will inspire, educate, and encourage you to break down your barriers and follow your heart. Here's your host, Jill Jack, on Empower Radio.
Hello, Dream Big listeners. It's so good to have you here. Of course, I always have very inspirational people on my show. That's my goal. My goal is to share the inspiration of people's lives and know that you're not alone in your dreams, that everyone has a dream and everyone has a path. It's whether we choose it or not. And what keeps us from choosing that path can be fear. It can be all different kinds of things. But sometimes you don't just have a choice. You just end up falling into your path. And there you go. You wake up one day and go, wow, how did I get here? So the guest I have today, I was trying to think this morning the first time I've met him. I don't even know. I think that I know he saw me perform and open for Dan Fogelberg, and he didn't know my name. I was so nervous doing that. It was a 7,000 seater or something, and I never said my name. And he was like, she didn't even announce her name. But this man has played drums. I've sung with him. He's played drums on my music, and he's just been a spiritual person for me all my life since I met him, I guess you could say. But he's in an incredible journey so far. I feel like I could grab a bag of popcorn and just watch his life on a movie, because it's been a crazy ride to watch what he's done. So without further ado, I want to introduce you to Pastor Danny Cox. How are you today?
Good. Thank you. I'm glad I'm here. I forgot about the Dan Fogelberg concert thing. Wow, mm-hmm. That brought back a memory.
Yeah, I remember you said that was the first time you saw me, and you were like, who is she and why is she opening for him? And she didn't even say her name.
She didn't say her name.
They literally had to push me out on the stage because I was so nervous.
Wow.
Yeah, they're like, is she ready? And Billy was there and he's like, yeah. And I'm like, uh-uh. And they pushed me out and I walked out that way, like not even graceful.
And so, you were awesome.
Wow, I was so new to it. That was like 6 months after my first release. But so let's talk about you.
I don't know if I would grab popcorn and watch my life, but
I would.
I appreciate that.
I would. You know, I think that, you know, just everything that I've seen you do, there's just a light about you. And I used to be scared of you a little bit, I think, because
really?
Sometimes you seemed serious. Yeah.
Wow.
And I remember like, oh, I'm not good enough to be around this guy. It was just, you know, musician insecurity. But so where did you grow up? What was your childhood like, you know?
It's been fascinating because I have five kids. So we adopted three and then we have two boys and they're all older, you know, 29, 29, 27, 21 and 19. But it was interesting when I look at their life, you start to go back to your childhood.
Right.
So I'm a lot like my youngest boy. He's pretty introverted. Even though I'm an extrovert, I was pretty introverted and I lived in my own little world, you know? So when I look back at my childhood, I think of it, I was kind of in my own dream world. And when I was 3 or 4 years old, I got introduced to music through a cousin of mine, and he was way into Peter Frampton and guitar, and he
Sweet.
Lived in the West Side, and he had this huge stack of Fender amps, and he had a drum set, and so he really introduced me, and my other cousin as well. It was she had a turntable, and she played Songs in the Key of Life, which to this day is still probably
one of my favorites.
Yeah, that's probably, I would say that may be close to my number one record of my life, And so that really just opened up a world. And I remember even at 3 or 4 years old, I told my dad, I want to play drums.
Really? So you knew back then?
Yeah. And he got me that my parents, believe it or not, got me a set when I was 3 or 4 years old, a little tiny, like, you know, one of those ones that you buy at the department store. And,
right.
And I didn't know really how to play, but the story kind of goes that all of a sudden my dad, it just had a little bass drum and a little tom, you know, maybe a snare drum and then one cymbal. And he heard me just doing this, like kind of a hi-hat sound. And he's like, that's impossible. He doesn't have that. And he came in and I had learned with just grabbing it with my hand how to make the sounds that I wanted to. So my dad went to my mom and said, I think we need to get him a better drum set. So I got a real one when I was probably like 5 years old.
Wow. So you've been playing. And, you know, anyone that has not seen Danny, he is one of the most, I mean, I think one of the greatest drummers that we have here in Michigan. Oh, I mean, you really are. What you're capable of making sounds. Exactly. You know, yeah. like that. That's funny that Songs of the Key of Life, that was really a turn for me too. I remember recording, a friend of mine had a 2-track recorder in her basement.
Yeah.
So I'd sing along. And
yes.
that was my first experience singing
That's
it.
Awesome.
I know, it was such a great album on so many levels. So so you just felt that. Now, did you have a lot of siblings growing
we
up?
Have, or? Yeah, I have 2 brothers, older and younger. Mm-hmm. So I was the middle, weird, spoiled child. You
middle
know,
that's child just, here
exactly,
too.
You know the journey. And it's very true. But yeah, I love my, some of my parents were close to my parents and my brothers. And really it was a beautiful childhood. I
That's
mean,
awesome.
Every childhood has its groaning and its beauty.
Sure.
You know?
Absolutely.
So there's groaning beauty to life. Of course we had that, but music was my release. And I was glad I had that because even from like, even the earliest memories of 3 or 4, I dealt with depression and anxiety, even from the very earliest days of my life. So music was, and especially drums was my way to, it was like my psychologist's couch, you know, psychiatrist's couch. It was some place that I could go and work out my feelings. And I see that with my youngest boy as well. He really works his feelings out through his art.
Mm-hmm.
And when I watch him, I'm like, wow, I did most of my upbringing. That's what I did.
Did you recognize it as anxiety? I mean, or did that come later?
It came later.
Yeah.
I think all throughout my, you know, probably 5 to 12 years old, mm-hmm. it was just a sense of what I would call melancholy.
Oh, okay.
And I was just different. I mean, mm-hmm. you could feel it inside on mm-hmm. the outside, maybe. And that's a lot of times what happens with people that struggle in that. You don't know sometimes on the outside, but in the inside, there's a whole nother world happening. And so I, you know, my parents were awesome about it. But when I got to my teen years, you know, those crazy teen years
yeah.
is when it all went off the rails. And that you could really label as depression. But back then, we didn't look at it that way.
No.
You had a sad kid
or something.
Yeah, yeah. You muscled through it. And my mm-hmm. parents did a great job. My dad really took me down some good paths. In fact, my dad, here's the interesting thing about my father. He's never had a depressed day in his life.
Really?
I have never seen him unhappy ever. So I really hated him for that.
You know, yeah. Like, how do you do that?
You don't understand your angsty teen, you know?
Yeah.
But I look back now and think, thank God, because he really gave me a perspective that I would have never gotten.
Right, because if he was struggling the same way, mm-hmm. you could have both dove in.
Right.
You know? Yeah.
Which was, you know, I think my mom really, we talk about it a lot now, but I think she really had the bit of that. So we have commonality there. But my dad really gave me skills and different things. So those teen years were difficult.
Mm-hmm.
But I was thankful for that. And I was thankful for... sometimes you don't appreciate the light until you've been in the dark.
You
need the dark. Now, even with what I do now, I can see it.
Yeah.
You can see
I'm
things.
I'm so grateful for the dark now.
Right.
I mean, I've had some dark moments in my life and I, you know, people said, oh, you had the terrible year last year. And I did. And I said, thank God I did, because now this year feels great. You know,
right.
I mean, you're just like, oh, I never want to go back to that. But,
right.
you know, I think the darkness is important so
it
that
is.
You can, when you're in the light, you're like, oh, I want to stay here.
Yeah.
But, you know, you can get out of the darkness as well. So you started playing professionally kind of young, right?
Yeah, I was, my first professional job was probably when I was 13, 14, something like
that. Were you playing in the clubs back then too? Kind of,
you know,
like illegally?
Illegally. I got offered a 4-night-a-week, believe this, there's this place on Van Dyke, they called it Mr. F's. There's a big cow on there at the time, not kidding. And I got offered a 4-night-a-week job when I was in 8th or 9th grade. I think I was in 8th grade. In 9th grade. And my mom said, no way. I don't want you in the clubs that young.
No kidding.
I was like, come on, I'm going to make $75 a week or something. Like, you know, it was like big money for me.
Yeah.
But I didn't do it, but I did do a lot of gigs on the weekend. And my music teacher in middle school, he hired me and when I was in 7th grade, and we did a lot, and he really taught me. His name was Gus Moore, amazing man, and I owe a lot to him.
Mm-hmm.
And you owe a lot to mentors, people that can see you and see into you.
Yes.
And then speak into it and draw it out. In fact, I would say as parents, that's our job. Our job as parents and mentors or leaders is to look into people and see who they're actually made to be and then call it into existence.
Yes. Because I always say, especially my Dream Big clients, you wouldn't be here unless you felt your seed. You know the seed.
Exactly.
I see the seed.
Exactly
I see
right.
it growing. And, you know, just let's not block it. Let's open it up, you know. And because everyone mm-hmm. has it so deep, but sometimes they just need somebody to go, here's my hand. I'll pull you through and get you to where you want to go. You
right.
know? And
boy,
I love it.
Sometimes apart from the people closest to you, like a Gus Moore, you know, my teacher, when you hear somebody apart from your family say, no, you have something, yes. let me take you somewhere.
Mm-hmm.
They don't know how important that is.
No.
Until you look back and you think, I owe a big part of my life to Gus and his wife, Carol, and their family. Huge. So I feel like that's my role even now as a pastor, same thing. It's like that you want to do that for people. You want to call it in this show, like even you in your intro saying what your vision is for the show. I said, well, how beautiful is that? That mm-hmm. every person has a dream mm-hmm. and wouldn't it be beautiful if we didn't talk about all of the negative parts, but we actually spoke to the dream that's yeah. placed in us and from the beginning of time, I believe, and call it out into existence and support it. That's what this is beautiful. And I love yeah. your vision for the show.
Thank you. I appreciate that. So you did play music for a long time. Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, that was, you were in some incredible bands. You know, I used to go see you and then you just kind of, did you stop playing for a little while? And you just kind of stepped out of it, like you were jaded from it, or, you know, you just kind of got sick of it, or did it kind of stay with you?
I've never had someone ask me, it's interesting you use the word jaded. I started playing professionally when I was probably 15. When I hit my late 20s, I got married. We had two little ones. It was at the end of the 90s, and I had done a lot of things,
mm-hmm.
But I had a lot of big dreams. And when I, you know, funny enough, when I hit 25, I got really depressed. I had a little window where I wasn't as depressed. But when I hit 25, I really rock bottom because I thought that my life was supposed to be something else. I thought I was supposed to be better.
Mm-hmm.
And I was disappointed with what I saw in the music business. Mm-hmm. It's a very dark business. It's not built off health. It's built off dysfunction. So the more dysfunctional the artist was, the more the business would draw that out of them. And right. I was around that so much. And I started realizing this isn't a healthy place for me, but I couldn't put it into words. And so I was a drummer primarily. And at 25, I said, something has to change. And my dad took me out of town and we went on a trip and I had a little piece of paper and I started writing down, which would be great for your show, is my dreams, you know, mm-hmm. like, where do I see myself? And all of a sudden I felt like I need to be a writer, a songwriter. And so at 25, I started teaching myself how to play guitar. I'd play a little bit. And so I would practice 8 hours a day. I was still doing my 4 nights a week. I was still doing my sessions as a drummer. So I was constantly working, but I was at home in the morning. I'd get up early and just practice 8 hours a day. My fingers would bleed. My nails would pull off. And I did that for a year.
Wow.
And I tried to teach myself how to sing. I was horrible. I pulled out some old cassette tapes.
I have a hard time believing that.
I'm telling you, it is so bad. I played it for my son. I was like, son, listen to this. He's like, that's awful. I was awful. But I just muscled through because and here's why. And that's why I think your jaded word is really good. I watched older musicians start to really get jaded.
Mm-hmm.
And I watched them start to really kind of look down on younger. I was the recipient of that. I had some idols that really, when things started to get a little success, when I started to get a little success, they turned away from me.
Mm-hmm.
And I felt like, wow, what a weird thing. I don't want to be that. I don't want to get cynical. Mm-hmm. I don't want to get jaded. And I was feeling that happening. And so I pushed through as an artist. And then I got to a point where my whole identity was only found in music. And when that happened, my world fell apart.
Mm-hmm.
And
mm-hmm.
that's when I know I needed a different path because I was placing my hope and my worth and my value and my identity in something that wasn't worth it.
Right.
And I had to find something bigger.
So that brings us to Kensington.
Yeah, it does in some ways. I was raised Catholic and then I had some kind of concept of God, but when I left high school and got into music business, I started studying every religion. You know, Hinduism, Buddhism, Sufism, Course in Miracles, all the self-help, the beautiful self-help era, everything I could find my hands on to find truth. And so at 33, I had this kind of convergence. There's this leadership theory that says that your life converges and emerges. Like mm-hmm. everything all comes in on itself and it hits a place. And then out of that, there's this emergence that happens. And I think there was one emergent there at 33. But it happened out of pain because all of my depression came back strong. My poor wife, like she really bore that brunt of that. And I was hospitalized a number of times and I got invited to play at this church. And I got invited to play my music first, my original music, and then come to play drums. And it was at that moment, 2000 Easter, where the pastor just said, come home. like God's coming you home. And I still, it's hard to talk about it.
Yeah.
Because it's so emotional. Because that moment, I had written a song called Coming Home, but I didn't know what it meant.
Mm-hmm.
And a Sufi poet, Rumi, he says that the longing we have in our heart is not depression, or it's not this anxiety, it's all these other things. It's actually a longing to be back with our maker.
Wow.
And in that moment, I was like, wow, this guy is speaking to something deeper inside of me. And that was an awakening. And now, that's just been a journey.
And so when you first were at Kensington, I know that they used to have that beautiful listening room and we could perform mm-hmm. there. And
that's where I first played. Yeah.
I know you booked me there. I was like, I love this place. Yeah. Everybody treated us so nice as musicians. You know, we weren't treated like the dog in the corner, right. You know? But was your heart open at that time? Or were you just kind of like going through the motions, playing the drums there? And then, you know, then it hit you.
Yeah. I think I was broken.
Okay.
You know, I was depressed. I was cynical. I was all the things I didn't want to be, but I was also longing.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes, you know, all it is an opening.
Right.
We have to be vulnerable enough, just a small crack, and let a lot of light in. And sometimes an older friend of mine that's my mentor, Lauren, he says that many times we live our life in self-protection. I think the world wants us to live there.
They do. That's what I was telling you before the show started, is that you feel like you kind of close off and it does protect you. But, you know, when I was in Haiti last week, my heart opened. And when it does, you're just like, whoa. I mean, it's just such this strong, powerful feeling of vulnerability.
Right.
But the joy that can come in, the light that can come in, is amazing.
Well, and Brené Brown, if you've listened to any Brené Brown stuff, mm-hmm. she talks so beautifully about vulnerability. And I think the world wants us to close off from each other, but I feel like God wants us to open wider.
Yes.
But we can't do that under our own strength, because there is so much that'll come in. We can't own all of that.
Mm-hmm.
And that's really the journey. So I think I was closed off, but there was a little bit of like vulnerability where God could come in and say, come with me, I have a journey for you. And that is a journey of faith. It's not a moment. I think sometimes we teach that so poorly. It's not a moment that all of a sudden just happens and now you're here. It's a moment that opens up a door that starts a walk.
Oh, that's beautiful.
And then you take one step at a time, and it's found as you go. In fact, in scripture, there's always a theme to say, as you go or as you are going. That's the phrase that is said many times. I believe that in our past, because you have a path from the time you're born until death, you are going.
Well, and I think that's a good, it's such a beautiful statement, because we always have this thing, if I could just get here, if I could just get here, instead of thinking about the journey in itself, is that is the gift, is the journey. As every day there is something that's bringing you somewhere to where you're supposed to be.
I think we could talk the whole time on what you just said.
Yeah.
I really do, because we are, especially in the West, we are destination driven.
Mm-hmm.
And what happens is our sight gets on the destination and we miss the present moment.
Absolutely.
And I do feel like God is asking people to become present.
Uh-huh.
Because actually, like this moment that we're having right now with the three of us in this room, that's it.
Right.
This is all we have. There's nothing guaranteed past this. And really in the past, we need to see that and have perspective. But we need to be present here. I need to be listening to you, and I need to be connecting to you, not thinking, oh no, where am I going to go
after
this?
What's the next question, right?
And that's life.
It is life. And I think we do have even like the way we plan life, you know, 401ks, your mm-hmm. social security, what's going to happen after you quit your job? And, you know, it's like, okay, but in the meantime, I'm still sitting here. You know, I'm right here right now. What am I doing? So it does seem that whatever you do, whether you were 3 or 33, that whatever you do, you are all in. And
yeah, I think so.
I love that about you. And so now I remember the first time I went and saw you at Kensington, and I was in a very strange place in my life, and you spoke to me. I had one of your moments in Kensington, and I just was a wreck. I was like sobbing. And I thought, my God, he has such a gift. And now you're the leading pastor. I mean, there you were, I think, in training.
I was a musician in training.
Musician in training to be a pastor. You were running the music program. And you were also, I mean,
that was being a teaching pastor at that point.
Yeah. Yeah. What was that journey like to commit to that? I mean, that is a commitment.
Yeah, I feel like it's just the journey. It's just the next kind of step that was presented. Mm-hmm. And every time Amy and I, my wife, are presented with a step, we just say, okay, Lord, what would this step be? You know, is this something that you want for us, or is this a human thing? And we try to make the best decision based off wisdom that we can. And so for me, it wasn't something that I was ever shooting for. That was
what I was wondering.
Right. Okay. I never had that on the target. But honestly, I've never been that way.
Really?
Yeah. The only things I've ever shot for was saying, I need to learn how to write songs. But I didn't say I want to learn to write songs so that I would have a career as a songwriter. I just like, I want to learn how to do this because I think this is a way that instead of becoming cynical, I can create something else and keep things moving and be positive. So it's always been that kind of a thing. And there was a lot of circumstances surrounding how I became lead pastor, but it's super humbling. So when they offered it to me, it took Amy and I like 2 weeks to really pray through and go, should I do this? Is this the right thing?
What were some of the reasons you might not have taken it?
I don't know if I could answer that exactly, but I want to always have a sense of peace about a step. It doesn't have to be all peace. It just has to have a sense of peace that this is right for mm-hmm. me, because not all advances are the right advances.
True.
And we tend to be an up and to the right, you know, place in terms of where we live in our context, and not all up and to the right is healthy mm-hmm. for your family, for yourself. And so we really wanted to make sure that that was healthy. Kensington is a beautiful home. I've been there almost 20 years. I love the people.
Can't believe it's been 20 years.
Yeah, I love the people. I love our leadership. I love the church. I love what we stand for and what God is doing there. But it doesn't mean that I'm supposed to be the leader.
Right.
You know, and I've always seen myself as probably the ultimate number two, because as a drummer, that's what you do. You're a servant to the musician and to the artist. That was always my, and so I felt like I'm a good number two. I don't know if I should be the lead. But it's been a great journey. It's been a year and a half and it's been beautiful.
So let's talk about your family a little bit.
Yeah.
So your wife, I mean, you guys have, how long have you been married now?
23, almost 24 years. Been together about 27, yeah.
And I remember when you were adopting your kids. I think I was there literally when you found out you were able to adopt them. Like it came through. I was performing at the listening room.
Wow.
And what was that like? And what has it been like, you know, in regard to, you know, bringing three children you've adopted and then two of your own, correct?
Yeah, we went to Honduras on a mission trip. Mm-hmm. First one right after Amy and I got baptized, and that 6 months later we were in Honduras. And we were working in an orphanage. We met a bunch of, there was like 30 some girls there at the time. We really connected to about three or four of them. And then, you know, we just went on a 4-year journey. We met them. They were 13, 14, and 15. They got home. They were 19, 19, and 17. That's how much red tape it took. We told our 19-year-olds, you can stay here. Like, you know, there's a crazy story about that. We don't have time to get into, but our adoption actually got denied stateside, but accepted Honduran side. Oh. And so we prayed and God said, go.
Wow.
And my wife stayed there for 2 months while I brought the boys back here, and we had no way to get our daughters home.
Oh my gosh.
And it was miraculous. That would be an awesome story to get into. But it's been 10 and a half years now that our girls have been here, and our youngest is still with us and here at, you know, still lives in our home. So it's been a crazy ride. Again, it's always groaning beauty. That's what my line recently. It's just groaning beauty. I wrote a song about that. I'm just like, this is our life's groaning beauty. It's beautiful and it's ugly and it's awesome and it's not, you know, so.
Well, and your album, your most recent album, you haven't released one since Fighting for the Beauty, right?
Right.
That album, I remember when you gave it to me, and there's so many songs on that record that just, I listened to it, I think, nonstop for a whole week when I first got it.
That's a big compliment. Thank you.
Yeah. I'm always moved by your music, always moved by your music. And especially when we get to sing together, I think it's just such a blessing for me. But can you tell people where they can find your music?
Yeah, I think the best place is DannyCoxMusic.com.
Okay.
It's still on iTunes, but DannyCoxMusic.com is the best because you'll be able to see all my work there. and I'm working on other stuff. I thought I retired at 50. I did a big show that you were part of in 20 Front Street. I secretly retired, but my friend Alan pulled me out of retirement last month. We did two shows and sold them out there, and that
you
was really fun.
You can't retire, Danny. You can take a break if you want, but you've got, I always tell my Dream Big clients, we were given the gift. We have to use it.
Yeah, well, so. I'll receive that.
Okay, good. And then also, how can people find Kensington Church where you will be speaking?
Yeah, so I'm at the location in Troy, which is at John R. and 19 Mile, but we have different campuses. We have a campus in Lake Orion. We have one brand new building in Clinton Township, which is beautiful, one in Clarkston, one in Birmingham, and then one in Traverse City. So there's a number of places that we are, and you can just go to kensingtonchurch.org.
And then on top of it, we have listeners that aren't in Michigan, so they're able to see you, though, right?
You can stream the services. If you go to the website, kensingtonchurch.org, you can stream services, watch it. So, yeah, that'd be awesome.
I've streamed it in my pajamas. It's been pretty awesome.
That's all we do.
All right. Well, I really appreciate you being with me today. I'm so happy you came. It was just a blessing for me, and only wish you the best. And I will continue to eat popcorn and watch your life. Okay.
All right. Well, all right.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
And thanks all you Dream Big listeners for listening.